The following one-hour recording is from the 2007 EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative Annual Meeting, in a session entitled, K-12 Students Speak Up About Technology and Learning. Are we listening? To learn more about EDUCAUSE, visit our website. It's www.educause.edu.
Some of you remember, have been around for a number of years, and remember the history of EDUCAUSE. And EDUCAUSE is the merger of two organizations, EDUCOM and CAUSE. And the president of EDUCOM is a guy by the name of Bob Hederick, and some of us knew him very well. Some of you may not have had that privilege. But Bob, a number of years ago, when nobody was really particularly worried about technology and teaching and learning, back in 1993, said, you know, there's a great frontier out here. We need to do something. So he put in place a process that led to the NLII, which led to ELI. Bill Graves, who is in the audience, and Carol Twigg initiated that effort and actually began the work that led to the organization that you see here today. Now, Bob passed away a couple of years ago in November of 2003, and because of his foresight, we always name this as the Bob Hederick Memorial Lectureship, because without him, we wouldn't be where we are today. And it is my pleasure to introduce to you Julie Evans. Now, some of you may have seen Julie's work, but she's the CEO of an organization called NetDay. And if you haven't heard about NetDay before, you will remember it from now on because they do absolutely fantastic work that has a tremendous amount of relevance to higher education and ELI members, not just because those are the students that we will have a year or two from now. NetDay conducts original research. They go out and they actually get students and teachers and, this year, parents involved. They do the analysis and bring those issues to national attention. And one thing they do very, very effectively is take those issues to Capitol Hill. And I can tell you from hearing Julie present a number of years ago and seeing the results of her work that having those students speak for themselves to congressional leaders, to legislators, makes a huge difference in what people listen to and the kinds of programs that are actually put in place. Last year, NetDay merged with another project called Project Tomorrow that has resulted in an even stronger agenda for the organization. And those of you who are interested in 21st century skills in technology education and community involvement in STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education, will find the agenda of this organization, I think, very interesting. And I think you will be most impressed with a lot of the work that they are doing. And it won't take long after Julie is up here for you to understand that she is very passionate about what she does with education and ensuring that all students receive a high-quality education, and technology is part of delivering that education. She is, as you might assume, a frequent speaker. She is a frequent commentator to the press, obviously very experienced, and she listens very closely to our learners and teachers and understands what they want and communicates that to people. You'll see the latest material released March 21st in a congressional briefing. She's also a graduate of Brown University. She's had a very successful career in for-profit technology organizations and has worked with a couple of startups. So I think that means that she has a lot of guts to be able to get out there and try things that haven't been done before. She has three children. So talk about energy, not just startup companies, but raising kids and being very active in all of these different venues. So please join me in welcoming Julie Evans.
How is everybody doing today? Well, I am so happy to be here with all of you today, and thank you for that wonderful introduction, Diana. I have long admired the work and the leadership of EDUCAUSE, and I was just so thrilled honored when Diana asked me if I would come here. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like hitting the lottery. I just feel so honored to be here. Thank you so much. We are going to be talking here this morning or this afternoon about kids, about what their thoughts are regarding technology, and what their ideas and dreams are. And this is coming from the perspective of our K-12 students. But before we get started, I wanted to see if we could have a little fun here. Many of us probably have cell phones in our pocket. Maybe you do a little text messaging. Some people are nodding. Okay, so take a look at this. This is an actual text message. And what I want you to do is see if you know what your next action should be from this. This is our reality check. How many people think you're supposed to stand up at this point? Wave your hand? Show us a cell phone? Or are you in the category of number four? Most of us. You're good sports, but I know that this applies to everyone here. This room is truly filled with big name fans. That's what you are, BNFs, of any time, anywhere, any place learning. But let's not be clueless. Clueless, 404. Love that. About the kids' point of view. So are we ready to talk? If yes, wave your hand. Ciao. So we are going to talk. And what we're going to be talking about today is really three things. Expectations. What are the expectations that today's K-12 students have of you, have of the higher education institutions that they're aspiring to go to? And what sort of expectations do you have of them coming up down the line? What's the context for all of this? And as I was telling Diana earlier, the thing that I love about being sort of this conduit of the students' views is it helps set things in context. It gives us a way to continue a conversation or start a conversation in some places around a new context. And I will also share with you, based on our data findings, what we're seeing is just some very emerging, sort of interesting trends. Not that we know exactly where they're going, but some beginning trends. I am going to make this presentation available to EDUCAUSE, so please don't feel like you need to take notes. You'll all get this. I'd be happy to share this. What we're going to be looking at today is specifically in the area of K-12 students, what types of devices and tools they're currently using, how they're using that technology for learning, as well as how they're using that technology outside of a learning environment, what they believe are the values associated with technology skills, and then how, if they were in charge of designing schools for the future, what would that K-12 school look like and how that may be interpreted actually to a higher education institution. We do this through a survey process that we call Speak Up. And in fact, we call it Speak Up for students, teachers, and parents. And as Diana mentioned, we do survey students, K-12 students, teachers, and their parents this year for the first time. It is 100% done online. It is a convenience sampling. It is open to every school in the country, public, private, charter schools, virtual schools, all types of schools have the opportunity. There is no charge or fee for the participating schools to participate. We collect the data, but besides collecting the data, we also stimulate local conversations and, as Diana mentioned, inform policies and programs. We have spent a lot of time informing our members of Congress, the U.S. Department of Education, U.S. Department of Commerce, as well as many state governor's offices, state departments of education, and also, interestingly, local school districts. What they tell me is that they truly get an aha moment when they start looking at what their own students are saying about learning, about technology, about what their dreams and aspirations are, and that that has had an impact on their planning, their budgeting, their civic engagement, and how they are redesigning schools for the future. We started this process in fall of 2003, and I will tell you sort of a little vignette story. We started this working with the U.S. Department of Education that at that point was working on a new K-12 National Education Technology Plan. And a couple of us got together, Diana knows John Bailey, and said, you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool if we could get some kids together to get some input from kids for the plan? And we sat around and said, well, you know, sure, we could do a focus group, which we do still continue to do, but wouldn't it be also even a little bit more trendy if we did an online survey? And, of course, as you know, millions of people became naysayers and said, well, you can't really do it. It won't really work. We had as our first aspiration 5,000 kids. The first year we had 210,000 kids take the survey. And in many cases, the kids themselves found out about the survey and went to their schools and said, you have to do this. From that, then, we heard from teachers who wanted to have a voice, and then this year we added on parents that wanted to have a voice. As you can see, our numbers are amazing in terms of the participation. And once again, this is all in a convenience sampling. We are not paying any kids, giving away any computers or iPods. This is all for the fact that all of these different stakeholders want to have a voice. We also disaggregate all of our data based on the NCES statistics. And so any of this data that I'm sharing with you can be disaggregated, and we do look at it a million different ways. Our national sponsors this year are Advanced Network and Services, which is a foundation that funds technology projects, Bell South Foundation, which has been based here before its absorption into AT&T, Dell, Google, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. We also work with a network of over 100 nonprofit partners and associations, and they actually are our outreach stream. We have really implemented a true viral marketing program in terms of getting the word out about Speak Up. This year's survey includes questions about teaching and learning with technology, 21st century skills, communications, connections. We talk about math and science, some global collaborations, competitiveness, and designing that school of the future. Some of these topics are foundational questions. We ask the same questions every year so that we can look at trends over time. And some are sort of some new things, sort of the experimental questions to kind of see what's going. But what I really want to do today is talk about how does some of this data that we have, how can it influence some of the work that you're doing by putting the focus on learners? What we have that I'm going to be sharing with you today is some very preliminary key findings. We ran the survey this year from November 1st through December 15th. We closed the survey on December 15th. I literally started looking at the data a few days ago. So we have very, very fresh data. This is very preliminary findings. But I wanted to let you know that you are the first group to take a look at some of this data. We will be over the next couple weeks continuing our analysis and then presenting our national findings in a congressional briefing on Capitol Hill on March 21st, and then subsequently speaking at many, many conferences over the next couple months. But a couple key findings just right out of the box. Communications and connections still continue to be number one with our K-12 students, and I'm going to give you a lot more detail on that. We also are continuing to see, even at a more exponential rate, the real desire that students have today for self-directed learning. We're really seeing the K-12 student taking learning as their own educational destiny and driving that destiny themselves, and that's something new in the K-12 space. We are also, however, sadly, still continuing to see a disconnect between how students want to use technology and are using technology and the adults that surround them in their learning world, how they think students want to use technology or how they are assuming kids want to use technology. And then the fourth one, and I'm going to get into this in a little detail with you, is the one that has been the most startling. We started to see this last year, continued to see this year, the increasing sophistication of the very youngest learners in our cohort group, the K-12 space. So when I start talking about the kindergartners, the first graders, the second graders, the third graders, in terms of what they're doing with technology, it will literally blow your socks off. I quite often go around and do focus groups with high school students. In fact, later this week, I'm going to Washington, D.C. and Virginia and doing a series of focus groups there. And I will say the same thing to the high school kids. They think they're very cool. They think they've got the whole technology thing figured out. And I said, you know, have you talked to a third grader lately? Because it's amazing. Let me show just a little bit of a context. You know, we've made great strides in the K-12 space in terms of connecting classrooms to the Internet. It has been a big milestone that has been measured throughout the country. And so you can see if some of us in the room can think way back to 1994, you know, no one was talking about either the need or the value for Internet connectivity in classrooms. NetDay, one of our predecessor organizations, started in 1996 with the idea of helping K-12 schools get connected to the Internet because of where that was. And then you see things really start to take off. Different federal policies and state policies came into place. And basically today we like to talk about the fact that virtually every classroom in America has an Internet connection. Let's put this within context of your customers, however. In 1994, your third-year students today were second graders. In 1996, your freshmen were second graders. Now, this is very interesting because quite often we will talk about millennials, and I also do a pitch on millennials, and we'll talk about the attributes of millennials, and we'll talk about the digital natives and how the students today are all born and grown up with technology. And yet, in fact, it's a spectrum of digital nativeness. Because if we look at the students that you are currently serving, your clients that you're currently serving, they in fact started their early learning years without necessarily having the access to technology that we see today. So we continue along. 10th graders in 1998 were in second grade. This year's 8th graders started second grade and had probably, you know, a pretty good shot of having an internet-based computer in their classroom. And then the kids that are in sixth grade today had even a better shot. It's interesting to look at the spectrum of digital nativeness, and I'm going to give you a little personal vignette. Beside all the work that I do talking to kids, working with schools all across the country, I'm also living this. I have a third-year college student. My daughter is a junior at Northwestern. I think there's someone here from Northwestern. And I also have a first-year college student who, my son David, is a freshman at George Washington. There is a vast difference between how my daughter approaches technology and how my freshman in college approaches technology. I also have a ninth grader who sits right in between milestones of 10th grade and 8th grade. And he has a vastly different interpretation of technology, value statements around technology. The work that we do, as I said, with the youngest children tells us again that those are truly the digital natives. So when we're talking about, are we addressing the needs of digital natives, let's remember that there are different place points where they came into this equation, just as we have different place points that we came into it. So the question is, not only should we be thinking about what are the expectations of these digital natives as they get to our higher education institutions, but also are we ready to serve them appropriately? Okay, let's jump into the data. First thing we're going to talk about is technology, devices, and tools. And across the board, we hear from kids that they are generally using desktop computers and laptops, and I'll talk about that in a moment. The things that are more interesting, though, is what are kids doing with cell phones, MP3 players, iPods, and game players. Across the board, you can see we have three columns, K2, 3.5, and 6.12. The gaming is universal, absolutely universal. All the kids are gaming. There used to be a lot of conversation around gender differences in gaming. We disaggregate all of our data and look at it from a gender standpoint. We are starting to see a total go away of that gender breakdown. Girls are gaming as much as boys today. The other thing that's interesting is on the cell phones. The cell phone numbers have just jumped through the roof, and you know that yourself. You see it everywhere. It has absolutely jumped through the roof. The thing that is amazing to us is that over 40% of K-12 students tell us that they have cell phones. They may not necessarily be bringing them to school, but they have them. As I mentioned, the desktops and the laptops continue to be the number one and number two devices that kids are using across the board. An interesting new trend that we saw in our data this year is the emergence of a smartphone or a BlackBerry. 9% of our high school kids are now carrying those. I'll tell you sort of an interesting little vignette while we go through this today. In one of our congressional briefings a couple of years ago, we had a panel of high school kids that were talking about their use of technology. And we were talking specifically about some of the rules and regulations that K-12 schools have about not using cell phones in school or not using different types of technology. And one of my panelists, you know, you always, when you put together a conference or you put together a congressional briefing, you sort of want to know what your panelists are going to say before you're up there in front of the audience. But one of my panelists, a young junior from a high school in Virginia, raised her hand and told me that she communicated every day with her mom at lunchtime. Now, I knew that their school did not allow cell phones, and I knew that they were not allowed to use the computer lab for email or instant messaging. And so I asked Shanna, how was she able to communicate with her mom every day? And she literally pulled out of her pocket her own BlackBerry. Now, the thing that was so interesting was that right directly in front of me was her high school principal, who I think almost had a cow right there in front of all of his peers for letting this, you know, transgression happen. But we've started to see this over the last couple of years. This is the first time it actually showed up in a definable number. We also asked students, K-12 students, about how they're using technology for schoolwork. What are they actually doing with the technology? And you'll see overwhelmingly the students say that they're doing research. They're doing internet research for their schoolwork, for their assignments. But we also saw some other trends that are starting to emerge here. Keyboarding, surprising to many of us, continues to be a major use of technology in our K-12 schools. I can't tell you how many different site visits I go on, different computer labs I visit, classrooms I go into, and what the kids tell me is that the only way they are using technology in the school day is for keyboarding programs. It's really amazing. The other thing that we've seen starting to emerge more and more, started the trend last year, continued it this year, is that more and more kids are looking to the use of technology for demonstrating what they know, and that's through either electronic portfolios or presentations. a really big uptick in that type of use, and so that's very positive. The other thing that we saw this year, and this was a new part of the question, we've asked this question over time, but we've never asked it this way before, is that students are also telling us that they are using technology during their school day for either test taking or test preparation. I'm going to get into the testing part of this a little bit more. Some of the other things that we thought might be interesting to share with you is that about a quarter of the students in grades 9 through 12 are emailing their teachers, using online textbooks. A large number of our students in grades 6 through 12 are using email and instant messaging to communicate with a classmate about a project, check on a grade. About 9% of the students in our polling base say they've taken an online class. Let's look at that online class bit a little bit more, because that's also very interesting. We've been polling on this for the last couple of years. About 9%, as I said, students have said they've actually taken an online class. But over a third of them say they are very interested in taking an online class, have very positive feelings about that, and would be interested in doing that. When we ask the students, why are you interested in taking an online class, or what do you think the value would be of that online class, the number one answer that comes up is that they're looking to get extra help in a subject area. I think that's interesting because when we talk at K-12 conferences or when we talk with our K-12 educators, they primarily are looking at online classes to either provide classes that are not offered at the school or to offer particularly like some AP classes so the students could get college credit. Where in fact the kids themselves are saying that they see it as a supplemental assistance as opposed to a direct instruction. The students also were very articulate about what they perceived, whether they had taken a class or not, as the value of an online class, and that was the opportunity to work at their own pace. So back again to that self-directed learning, to being in control of their own educational destiny. When we asked the students, well, what subject area would you like to take a class in? The overwhelming answer is math, and that's also very interesting for us because it parallels some other questions that we've asked over the last couple years. And that is, over the last couple of years, we've been asking students, what class do you think needs some more technology infused into it? What class are you taking would be more interesting if you had more technology? It doesn't matter which way we ask that question. We slice and dice it all sorts of different ways. It always comes up as math. And I have had many, many conversations with our math teachers around the country, our nonprofit groups and associations of math teachers, and they are also somewhat stymied by the idea of infusing more math into their curriculum. The other one that came up was foreign language. We thought that was interesting. I told you we wanted to talk a little bit about testing. This was a new question area for us this year. We started asking some students some questions about testing, particularly how would they like to best show their teachers or themselves their proficiency or their knowledge. And what the kids told us was the big three were tests. Whether they're standardized tests, your basic bubble test, or an online test, doing collaborative projects. We know from the millennials, this is a group that loves collaborative projects and teamwork, and that continues through. But then the third one echoes back to the question we had about tools, what types of electronic presentations they could put together, whether it is as simple as a PowerPoint or an iMovie or some sort of video show or an electronic portfolio. The students really believe that that is a very effective and authentic way for them to show their knowledge. We also asked questions about testing in general, and this is a little bit off the topic, but I thought it was interesting for this audience. And they also said that what they worried about was that the tests were gateways for them. They were gateways to get into college and also bellwethers of how successful they would be in college. We thought that was interesting. Look at technology use outside of school, because this now we're getting into some really juicy stuff. As you would expect, we have kind of the big four. It used to be the big three, but now it's the big four. Email, instant messaging, gaming, music downloads, and MySpace. Why don't we start with the email and instant messaging? The email and instant messaging is very interesting. That universally has been one way that students have been using technology. You can see that gaming is universal across all age groups, but downloading music has taken off in terms of where student interest is. And that, once again, as I mentioned with the gaming, the music downloading has no gender differentiation at all. It is universally done by girls and boys. The MySpace question, and you're all very familiar with this, we actually started asking questions about MySpace and personal websites 3 years ago, so we've seen this trend. This year, the number jumped once again, pretty much doubled from where our number was last year. The thing that's very, very interesting about the mind space, and we will be doing more of this analysis, and so some of this conversation is going to have to be postponed a little bit, but one of the things that we have seen in the mind space conversation with students is that there is not a gender split. There is not a socio-demographic split. The split is along whether the kids consider themselves advanced tech users or beginning tech users, which is very, very interesting. We ask, as one of the foundational questions in our Speak Up survey, we ask students to self-assess themselves. Do they consider themselves an advanced tech user compared to their peers, an average tech user compared to their peers, or a beginning tech user? Once again, it's a self-assessment. Universally across the board, every single year we've done this, about 70% of students believe that they are average tech users, and that doesn't matter whether it's a kindergartner, a fourth grader, or a 12th grader. What we may consider advanced, the kids think of themselves as average. But there's a group, about 25%, that consider themselves advanced. One of the things that we ask students is, what is your favorite communications tool? So now this is part of our audience participation part of the program again. So given the tools of email, instant messaging, cell phone for talking, cell phone for texting, which one do you think is the K-12 student's number one favorite? How many people think it's email? Instant messaging? Cell phone for talking? Cell phone for texting? I love doing this. Cell phone for talking. Okay, part of that is that a lot of kids don't have phones that can do the texting yet. We did see a slight uptick from last year to this year in the texting. But you know what it comes down to is kids still like to talk. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about email or instant messaging, we're still talking about human beings, and kids still like to talk. It is the favorite of 36% of the kids in grades 6 through 12. And look at the daily use numbers there. I am amazed with this. Once again, it talks to that youngest student sophistication. You know, there's a lot of talk out there, particularly in the K-12 space, about schools banning cell phones. If you bring your cell phone, you're going to get expelled. The schools have a great big basket filled with cell phones. Universally, the kids tell me they're bringing the cell phones to school. They're using the cell phones. It has become an indispensable part of their life. The other thing that's indispensable for these kids is connecting with other students. You've already seen this. You saw it through Facebook. That's what Facebook was all about. That's what MySpace is all about. The thing that's interesting is that we started asking some questions about who these kids are connecting with. This was the first time we had asked this question. 23% of our high school kids are connecting with other students around the country. So not just kids at their school or in their town or on their local football team, but they're connecting with other kids that they're meeting around the country. 17% are connecting with students around the world. One of our themes this year was collaborations globally, so we were impressed to see this number. This other one, this last one that I have up here, totally blew us away. When we look at, once again, our upper elementary kids, our kids that are in grades 3, 4, and 5, and just so you know context, basically 9, 10, and 11 years old, 50% of those students are using online tools, email, instant messaging, the MySpace-type activities, to connect with other students somewhere. So their outreach is way beyond their neighborhood, way beyond their elementary grade, their school, their playground, their soccer team. We ask kids how many of these online friends they have. You can see for our middle school and high school kids, they're connecting with 20-plus online friends monthly. If I look at just how many kids told us they had 50 or more online friends that they talk to monthly, that number's about 28% of our middle and high school kids. Of that number, 34% of those friends they have never met. So this is not a case of you saw Johnny at lunch and then you came home and you emailed him. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about this connection, this global connection, using technology and leveraging technology out. Once again, looking at our upper elementary kids, the fact that 22% of those kids have online friends that they have never met, I think is going to be a very interesting statistic for our K-12 schools, and particularly our K-12 parents who have no idea that their kids are connecting. And how are they connecting? They are connecting. Some of them are connecting through MySpace. They're connecting through online gaming. I had an opportunity to do a focus group with a group of middle school kids about a year and a half ago. And talking to those middle school kids, and it was an audience type thing. We had brought some members of Congress in, and also had the media there, had some different dignitaries there from the different communities. And the kids quite unabashedly told us that they were online gaming every day with strangers. These were sixth graders. The teachers in the audience, you could see their faces were down to the floor, as were their parents. They had no idea this was happening. This was the same focus group that I did, that when I asked the kids how they learned about new technologies, how they learn about new websites, how you learn about places to go, kids told me they share URLs. They're writing URLs down on lunch bags across America and sharing that. Now, has anyone here, think back to your own childhood. Think back to middle school. Some of us, it was not as pleasant an experience. I don't think any of us were writing down URLs on lunch bags and sharing them. That's what's happening on our playgrounds of America, folks. What else are kids doing online using technology, this connectiveness? As I said, they're making new friends. We know that. Blogging, whether it's creating a blog or posting to a blog, they are doing it all across the board. Sharing writing online for critical writing, for writing review, for publishing, self-publishing. We saw beginnings of creating some podcasts among students. 13% of students, grades 6 through 12, have posted a video. Where have they posted it? They've posted on YouTube. 13%. Once again, over 50% of these kids have MySpace pages that they are regularly updating. The kids are working on collaborative projects, the online gaming we talked about, and sharing music. A new trend that we saw this year, and we asked it, you know, sometimes we'll put questions on the survey that we just think are sort of interesting. Most of our questions come from teachers, students, parents. We actually review that all through an advisory board. This was one that we just sort of threw on literally at the last moment. They're going, 25% of kids, kindergarten through 12th graders, are going to TV show websites and movie websites for interaction. In other words, they're voting for American Idol. That's what's happening. We asked kids this year about what is the value of having good technology skills. You know, why is this important to you? And the kids do tell us across the board, having good technology skills is very essential for them. And here were the top responses: to get a job, to have success in college, to be aware of the world, and also to do well in school. So what are the obstacles to these students using technology more effectively in schools? I mentioned before there is a continuing disconnect between how the students want to use technology and what their actual K-12 learning environment looks like. And in fact, what the kids tell us is that they have a very full, technology-enriched, connected life outside of school. They get into their K-12 schools, and they are stymied in that use. And the kids are also frustrated and disappointed by this because they know they need to have these good technology skills and experiences to, as I said, be successful in college or get a good career. For our youngest students, our students in grade 3 through 5, it is still an access issue. There's still a lack, from the kids' perception, a lack of computers, they're not in a convenient location, and the internet access is still slow. When we talk to our middle school and high school kids, the conversation changes. And we saw this starting last year, and it has come on gangbusters with exponential growth in terms of the voices of the students talking about this. And it's control. The rules that our K-12 schools have regarding no cell phone use, can't access email, can't access instant messaging, the fact that their teachers control the technology access and the filters. I'll give you another vignette. There is a high school that I'm very familiar with that has put in place a laptop program. And if you're familiar at all with any of the education technology trends in K-12, that has been a big theme and has become louder and louder in the last couple years. And it's the idea of having students have laptops. They can use it in the classroom. The teachers are integrated. Their skills are integrated in terms of how to use it. In some cases, the schools are providing the students with laptops. In some cases, they're telling the students to bring the laptops themselves. At this particular school, which is in a very affluent area in Southern California, the students do bring their own laptops from home, They bring them into their English class, their social studies class, their science class, and they have the opportunity to use them in the class as part of the activity. All sounds great, right? Sounds like this is the type of modeling we'd like to see in our K-12 schools. The school district is very concerned about their network security, and so the system that they have in place is at the start of each class period, the teacher goes around to every single laptop and puts in a unique password code for that day that can only be used for that day. That is to protect the network. So the students have the luxury of having the device and having sort of the blush of we are going to interact with technology, sit within instruction, and yet still the school is putting rules around how they can use it, when they can use it, why they can use it, and adding inefficiencies that the kids are blown away with, how inefficient it all is. This is the type of thing where the kids are having a great disconnect, a high degree of frustration, and where the kids are telling us that in many cases, and this has led to the whole high school reform effort, they're beginnings of seeing the irrelevancy of their high school experience. I had a student who is a freshman in college now say to me the other day, he said, high school is not for learning. He said, it's to get from here to someplace else. That is some of the crisis that in the K-12 world we're dealing with in terms of trying to make education, particularly high school education, more relevant. But it comes to the place of technology because the kids look at this as one of their milestones or bellwethers is how effectively the school is using technology. Another interesting thing, the kids tell us quite often, if I'll have a group of kids, and I do focus groups, as I said, with kids, I'll have a group of kids and I'll say, well, you know, tell me which of your teachers is technology savvy? Which of your teachers do you think is really on the money in terms of leveraging technology and integrating technology? And after the kids laugh for a while, they then will say, well, yeah, I can think of this teacher or that teacher or this teacher. And I said, well, how do you evaluate whether a teacher is tech savvy or not? And the kids will go into great detail and explain to me, which they're not using this language, I'm going to use this language with you, is that they have, in fact, developed a rubric for evaluating every single one of their teachers on their tech savviness. I will bet dollars to donuts that none of the teachers know that their students are sitting there with a rubric assessing their technology skills. But that is where the kids are today. They are seeing that they are part of a very rich technology life over here outside of school. They know the jobs and college life and their perception require these technology skills, and yet they're seeing in their school day a disconnect. I had one panel group where a student, actually from Mississippi, we were presenting in front of a group of K-12 teachers about the size of this room. She literally shook her finger at the teachers and said, don't you realize when you don't allow me to use technology, you're limiting my future? You could hear the gasp. What else have kids told us? Ask kids, if you were a principal for a day, what would you do? If you were designing a new school for kids just like you, what would be the most essential thing or the most critical thing for you to have to help you with learning? Overwhelmingly, kindergarten through 12th grade, for the last 2 years, the kids tell us a laptop for every student that the students can use throughout the day to access knowledge. The kids have gone beyond the idea of the laptop as an information vehicle. They see it as a door opener to knowledge. And once again, back to that self-directed learning. And it doesn't matter whether I am in a very poor minority community or a very affluent community, an urban community, a rural community. These kids, every single group I've talked to, they know that out there, kids are getting laptops. And they will say to me, do you know of this community? Do you know of that community? Do you know that they have laptops? What are the kids doing? It is like a groundswelling. The other ideas that some of the kids have come up with, and once again, that laptop one is number one across the board, but some of the other ones are equally interesting, particularly for this audience or for some of the things that you're thinking about. You can see a large number of kids are very interested in how do we leverage some of the other tools? How do we leverage a cell phone? How do we leverage a handheld? How do we leverage an MP3 player? How do we use email or instant messaging or blogs more effectively to communicate with each other, whether it is teacher to student to student, teacher to teacher? How do we utilize the tools that we have to be more effective? Kids are very interested, as I said, in the presentation component of technology. How do I show what I need, what I learn? And so there's a couple different devices for that. And they're also very interested in how to leverage the device that they are all more and more carrying around, which is an MP3 player. So here's a few trends, and then we're going to open it up to questions, because you might very well have some different ideas yourself that you might want to share as part of this conversation. So as the real digital natives are getting ready to go to college, here's some things you might want to be thinking about. One, be aware of the spectrum of digital nativeness, that there are different interpretations of that, that kids are coming to you or will be coming to you with different levels of being on that digital native roadway. They jumped on at different points, and thus that has colored their impressions and colored their expectations of you and what they're expecting of you. The new communications devices and tools, this is from an industry standpoint, you know this, is growing exponentially. The thing that is most interesting about this is that from an industry standpoint, the industry product developers come up and they say, this is what this device is going to do or what this tool is going to do. But don't put it beyond these kids to invent new uses for the technology. One of the things that's been really interesting to us is as we've been tracking the instant messaging and the email conversation, we saw last year a really interesting sort of little blip in our statistical analysis, and it looked like email was on the wane. And so we did a little bit of extra polling, and I did some extra focus groups around that. And here's what the kids told us, and these were middle school kids. They told me last year that email is only for grandparents, that it no longer is their communications device or tool of choice, because it is not fast enough. It is not instantaneous. It comes back to that connectiveness. So I said to them, I said, but you still have email accounts. So what are you doing with your email accounts? They're using it as a storage medium. They are in the same way that we may use a memory stick or a USB port. They're using an email that way. So they will email something to themselves and then pick it up somewhere else, wherever their travels may be, either whether it is a group of pictures or a file or a homework assignment. It has become an email device. The kids put one extra caveat on. They said that they will email with their teachers and grandparents. This connecting without boundaries, the fact that the kids want to be connected is such a huge opportunity, I think, for us to move in that direction. How do we leverage this connectiveness, the connectiveness that they already have, the tools that are in place to connect students, and the opportunities that they definitely have the desire to connect? One of the questions that we asked on the survey, beside asking multiple choice, ranking, yes or no questions, we also do something that is totally insane. We ask, on every survey, we ask two open-ended questions. This year, we asked our upper elementary kids, our middle school kids, and our high school kids, if you were going to collaborate on a project with kids from a different country, what type of project should that be? What type of project would you like to collaborate with? And what country would you like to collaborate with kids from? And we are just starting to look at those responses. We have probably about 75,000 responses to that question, so that's quite an analysis job, as you can imagine. But just in starting to look at them, they are very thoughtful and very reflective, not only about what their desire is to learn from other students, but their what they can offer these other students and what these students can offer to them. The one that sticks in my mind, and as I said, I have only looked at a handful of these, was an eighth grader wrote that he wanted to do a project, a collaboration project, with students from Iraq because he wanted to understand how what has happened in the world has impacted them. I thought that was very reflective of that student and spoke to that connectiveness that these kids are thinking beyond their own boundaries. The other trend that I would have you think about is that for these kids, technology is just a tool. It really is. I know it's hard for us. I know for those of us that go, oh my gosh, this is my laptop and my cell phone and my iPod. For these kids, it's just stuff. It's really just stuff. It goes back to that old thing which said if you had to learn about it, it was technology. If you didn't learn about it, it's not technology. The kids really look at this as a tool, not as a fad, and it's way beyond, oh, using technology is something fun. What the kids tell us, this is one of our survey questions, is that the number one reason they like using technology for their homework assignments is because of the effectiveness, the efficiency, and the accuracy of the information. It really comes back to, you know, years ago, and as Diana pointed out, I've been in the technology industry for a long time. You know, a long time ago, we talked about technology was going to make us all more efficient. You know, in some cases, maybe not. But for the kids, it's a realization. They really do believe they are more efficient using technology. An interesting story, one last vignette here. We had a group of students that told us this story. They had a teacher in an English class, it was an AP English class, I think it was comp, was concerned about plagiarism, felt that maybe the kids were doing too much cut and paste from the internet. And so what she asked the students to do on their essay, their next essay, was to handwrite it. You know the answer to this. These are kids, these were 11th graders, did not know how to write in that way. Because they are used to, oh, this is an interesting heading sentence, but I like it better as a closing summary sentence. Oh, I'm going to move this paragraph here, move this paragraph here. What the class universally did was they did it on their computer, and then they handwrote it. And then my last one, and this is sort of the vision that we have, sort of our modus operandi, what drives us every day with our Speak Up survey, is the inclusion of students, more and more student voice into planning, into thinking about learning. It really helps put it all within context, and as I said, helps give you that aha moment. Some of the next steps we have coming up, we are continuing to do our analysis. We actually make available to every school and district that participates in our Speak Up surveys, they get access to their own data with national benchmarks. We provide that to them online, and that actually is coming this Friday. We also have the release on March 21st, where we'll be also looking not just at the student data, given you some tidbits of the student data. We also have our parent data and our teacher data, the comparatives over time, as well as within those three groups. The other thing that we do is that we do custom reporting for different groups, whether those are different nonprofit groups, different types of institutions, federal agencies, state agencies, and business groups. Series of custom reports, also consulting projects. And actually, the other thing that we have started doing, which is really a lot of fun, is what we're calling Speak Up Your Way, which is the opportunity of leveraging our Speak Up methodology and our internal expertise to do your own Speak Up survey with students, teachers, and parents. We do start question development in the spring, and then Speak Up 2007, which will be our fifth year of doing this survey project, will launch on October 1st. I do hope that you stay in touch with us. I have thoroughly enjoyed having the opportunity to share this data with you. I can think of a million different ways that we can collaborate together and work together and share information and learn from each other. And so I do hope we continue to listen and to get ready for the next group of students. Thank you so much. We do ask in some of our questions, we ask students if they are using the internet to find out about colleges, to apply online, to find out about scholarships, to financial aid. I can extract all of that data separately and disaggregate that based on what schools they're coming from. We have not done that work to date. I have not asked them specific questions regarding their experience with online applications, whether it is with performing arts institutions or regular colleges and universities. It would be a very interesting topic to survey on them. Because we've got the back end of being the NCES, the Department of Education's database of K-12 schools, we have all kinds of demographic identifiers that are available to us. And so what we do is we extract our national findings and then run it against a test bed of our sort of sample schools that we pull from the NCES database. And all the data stands up. It's very, very interesting. We also very carefully, though it is a convenient sampling, during the registration process, we actually have schools that register in advance to participate, and we watch their demographics as well, and we'll do sort of extraordinary outreach to make sure that our data is clean across the board. I think the thing that is most interesting is that when we get districts, and we have had school districts, K-12 school districts, that have had upwards of 80-90% of their students, and I'm talking large districts, you know, California, Texas, scale districts so that they're having 30, 40, 50,000 kids in the survey base. They're the ones that are coming back to us and saying that it matches their demographic profile and they're validating the data for us. So you're right. We, because it's a convenient sampling, we need to do some extraordinary extra things to validate it. But interestingly, it has all stood up. One of the questions was about what kids were doing online. That was specifically downloading of music. And then the second question where we talked about some of the ways that kids were using blogs and podcasts, that was specifically sharing. So there actually is a differentiation. We differentiated in our question between those two. I will tell you that their expectation is that it is better. Their expectation is very positive. Their expectation is that these rules and regulations that are binding them go away when they get to college and that they have more access to technology, and that they also believe, I've done this in focus groups, they do believe that in the college setting or university setting, that all of the professors they will have will be very technology savvy and will be integrating technology across the board seamlessly. Yes, I have had students tell me that. I think they've been on the college tours. I know that there are a couple different studies that are out there that actually do poll some college kids. I think the Indiana University that takes a look at college kids and does poll them on their high school experience. Some of that has been input into this national high school reform effort that has been going underway here for the last couple of years. Some of that work is referenced under that. Particular ones that I'm thinking about, I don't think they've been asking very many comprehensive questions about technology. I will tell you what we asked the parents. To be quite honest with you, I have not looked at the parent data yet. As I said, we just got the data coming across from our technology group. But what we asked parents was we wanted to know what parents' perceptions were of their students' use of technology in school. We asked parents about their communications with the school. We asked them about what their concerns were regarding the big topic of competitiveness, jobs of the future, whether they were concerned that their students would be able to find a good job, what types of learning experiences they needed to find a good job. We asked parents about what their concerns were regarding math and science instruction in their schools. Those were along the lines. Some of them are comparative questions with the teacher survey and the student survey, and some of them are standalone, particularly to parents. I'd be happy to get back to you with the parent data. So that you understand the way this works, generally students do not come on to us individually. So we do not promote this electronically, and kids don't come to us individually. In fact, schools sign up to participate. And then the school or district designates whether or not they are going to have a particular class. In some cases, they'll say, I want all of our English classes to take the survey third period. Or they will say, I want a particular grade level to take the survey. That is generally dictated by the K-12 school or district as to who comes on. So some of that is somewhat mitigated by the fact that we don't have individual students. Where I have a little bit more of that bias, to be honest with you, is in my teacher data. So I pay a little bit closer attention to that bias in the teacher data. It is conceivable a teacher would find out about the Speak Up survey and come on just individually by themselves. In general, what we do is that we look for where, once again, a school or district has signed up to take the survey, and they bring all the teachers into the computer lab as part of a staff meeting, and they say, we're all going to take the survey right now. We do collect more demographic data from the teachers and the parents than we do the students. The students, the only thing that we're asking the students is their grade level and their gender, so then we use the back end of NCES to give us the demographics there. For teacher and parent, though, we are asking, for teacher, we're asking what grade they teach, what gender they are, their racial, ethnic background, the teaching experience, their degree, whether they have a master's degree or just a BA or a BS degree or an associate degree. So we ask a lot more data. Parents were asking income level. So we're going to be able to slice and dice that data much finer on that side. You know, the survey is one piece of the research project. We do an extensive lineup of focus groups. I do them post the survey closing. And in most cases, what I do is that I will go into a particular school, like I'm going on Wednesday and Thursday of this week to a school in D.C. and Virginia, and I will poll my focus group participants, the kids that the schools have brought together, to see whether or not they took the survey or not. Interestingly, in most cases, they have not taken the survey. It just happens, sort of happenstance. But we do an extensive array of focus groups across all grade levels, because that actually helps us put the analysis within context. Plus gives me all these fascinating vignettes that I have to share with you. These kids are taking the idea of doing, for example, presentations. They're using instant messaging for helping them put presentations together. They are using podcasts interactively with different presentations. They are using, I'm trying to think of all my different examples here. What's really interesting is where the kids are using MySpace as the presentation development platform. That's kind of interesting. the instant messaging and the cell phone, the whole cell phone opportunity with text messaging with cell phones. There's actually some very, very interesting work. I think some of it started in higher ed, some very interesting work in some K-12 schools regarding using cell phones as an instructional device. I'm actually involved with a project in North Carolina with cell phones for math instruction. So there's all kinds of interesting things. I'm trying to say, I don't think there's any clear cut. This is the one that I've seen predominantly. They're just sort of starlights at this point. I gave you really just a snippet of some of the data that we've gathered. And please, you know, we put all this data up on our website. Our current last year's report is up on the website. You can take a look at that. But one of the questions that we've asked the kids for the last 2 years are, which of these hot issues, which are concern issues, are the most concerning to you? And it was very interesting because last year what the kids told us is that what was concerning to them about technology was spam, those type of things, viruses, hacking and viruses. The one that came up this year was privacy issues. So the kids are very self-aware of what some of the privacy issues are. I think you saw it yourself, you know, with Facebook, and then they started to see it with MySpace. And in fact, we are actually starting to see, though, you know, I don't want to curse anything here. We are actually starting to talk in our focus groups with conversations. More and more kids are sort of walking away from some of the big sharing they were doing with MySpace. I mean, the big sharing that was happening about a year ago. Kids are definitely rolling back from that. And the older kids are teaching the younger kids what's appropriate. And I think that's very interesting as well. We ask a couple questions on the teacher survey. One, we ask if they have technology in their classroom, what type of technology that they have that's been provided by their school. We also ask them what type of technology they have at home, what type of access they have at home. Actually, we actually ask the students this year what type of access they have at home, too, that we're going to use as a foundational thing. And we do ask the teachers to self-assess. We ask them to self-assess their technology literacy, which is not a, you know, it's just a self-assessment. It's interesting what I have seen, and I have done teacher training on technology. Gosh, I think I did my first teacher training on technology 10 years ago. And the same thing held true then for K-12 teachers as it holds true now. When I did my teacher training 10 years ago, we would have two classes. We'd have an advanced class and a beginner class. They were labeled advanced and beginner. And basically, it was the same population. It was just whether the teachers were bold enough to say they were beginners. But we taught the same curriculum. It's the same thing today. The teachers have a greater propensity to assess themselves as advanced, but given practice, they are basically average to beginner. You know, when I put the statistics about internet connectivity, we've made great progress. We know that the teacher skill level has lagged greatly, greatly behind that. We hear that from the kids. We actually hear it more and more from the teachers themselves. And what the teachers tell us, K-12 teachers tell us, they've come to the realization they don't want another class on how to do a PowerPoint or how to create a formula in Excel. What they want is instruction in how to take the curriculum that they have, whether it is book curriculum or online curriculum, the standards from their state and the technology resources that exist, and how do they make that seamlessly effective and efficient. And that is what K-12 schools are still struggling with, is how do you do that? I don't believe we've come to any tipping point yet in terms of that skill level. The kids talk about, one of the things that was really interesting, we have not asked a question about Second Life. That's on next year's survey. But one of the things that was really interesting is that 2 years ago we had an open-ended question on one of our surveys, which was, what new technologies do you think need to be invented to help kids with learning? We got about 50,000 meaningful responses from that particular survey question and did a project jointly with the U.S. Department of Commerce where they did the analysis and they created the report. The report is on our website. It was amazing because the kids went very deeply into virtual realities and how they feel that learning in a virtual reality environment could be very beneficial for them. They talked about wanting to experience history, to truly experience history. The other thing that was really interesting is the other part of that is beside, there was a lot about virtual learning, there was a lot about different types of devices the kids would invent. I actually think it's like a venture capitalist dream, this report, because it has all these product design ideas in it. The other thing that was really interesting was that we had, I wouldn't say a majority, but a good portion of the kids that were very interested in having a direct hookup. They wanted to figure out how you get the wire directly into the brain and just download the information. They also, we had, you know, it's not a one-off. We had a lot of those that we weeded through. The kids also articulated very well, however, what if I got a virus? How would I deal with that? It's really fascinating. That's on our website if you want to see that report. It's a great report. Started off with the idea that we wanted to collect some authentic, unfiltered feedback, stimulate some local conversations, but it came to us pretty clearly that we need to be able to provide some guidance. And so that is what our consulting part of our sort of our program set is, where we do provide consulting out to schools, to districts. We'd be happy to do the same with any of you here on how to interpret the data, how to make good use of the data, and what it means for your either current policies or programs. We do that type of work as well now. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this EDUCAUSE podcast. You can listen to this and other podcasts or join our ever-growing community of bloggers at connect.educause.edu. EDUCAUSE is a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing higher education through the intelligent use of information technology. Connect, learn, network, and grow at EDUCAUSE.